What's up, bingers? My guest today is a former Navy cop now turned podcaster. She hosts the Paradise After Dark podcast with her husband, Ken, where they tell stories of what happens in paradise after the sun goes down. Please welcome Lauren Samples.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge.
Right, Lauren, thank you so much for joining me today, all the way from, it looks, I can even see on the wall behind you, it's nice and sunny there.
It is.
Nice in the sunshine state, nice warm day in Florida, I presume.
It is. It's about 80 right now.
No,
but we're getting, we're getting a cold front supposed to be coming through, which means it's going to get down to about 60.
All the way down to 60, huh?
Yeah, that's cold for us.
It's currently 32 degrees here in Michigan today. But me, like a knucklehead, I'm still wearing my gym clothes. So the walk from my house to my office in my shorts and t-shirt is, my neighbors are always looking at me funny when I do that. But I'm going to get some warm weather. My Truth and Justice audience doesn't know what's going on, but I'm working on our next case. And I'm actually going to the desert for a week. I can't say where, but it's desert, which sounds fabulous right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll be in the desert in April. Crime Con.
Oh, in Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
Yeah. Is it April this year? I know it's in Vegas. I haven't looked at like when it is.
It is the last weekend of April, I believe.
They moved it up this year. Usually it's in June. You look super familiar to me. Have I met you at Crime Con in the past?
Yes, we've met several times, but it was always in like a big group setting. So, you know.
Well, see, this is what I'm remembering. Was it always in a big group setting and possibly we were both drinking heavily?
Probably, yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's all coming back to me now. I feel like I remember you in Austin in some outdoor patio area.
Yes. But remember, we actually played True Crime Trivia. We didn't play against each other. I don't even know what team you were on, but I was playing with you guys that day. And okay, I actually almost won. I was second. I came in second. Dr. Shiloh beat me.
That's true. But if I remember correctly, I was cheated and Rebecca cheated me on that.
Well, I don't know anything about that, so.
I don't remember how, but I remember I was very upset. I was Shiloh and I have a bit of a competitive thing going on between us, so I was really pissed off that I didn't get to go. I do remember that you were the finalist in the head-to-head with Dr. Shiloh.
Yeah. And,
no offense, but that should have been me. I should have been the champion.
I don't know. Maybe I could have beat you, though.
Yeah, it could be. I was. I just so happened that the topic that was all my questions were based on. I had just watched the Heaven's Gate documentary, like the week before I went, and all the questions were on Heaven's Gate, and I was nailing it. And there was some sort of, I don't know what it was, but whatever it was, I won. Basically, in my mind, I won the competition.
Have to have a rematch.
Right. Right. All right, so let the audience learn a little bit about you. So your podcast, Paradise After Dark, you've been up and running since 2018. You just crossed, 3 years?
Yeah, we're at about 3.5 years right now, yep.
Nice. Any plans to stop?
No. Actually, we haven't really told our audience yet, but as of January 1st, we're going to be going weekly instead of biweekly, and we're going to branch out outside of Florida. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Going to get a lot busier.
Yeah, I bet. And now I guess we should back up a little bit and learn a little bit about you. But yeah, right now the podcast covers all Florida cases.
Right.
But so you're going twice as many episodes, you're expanding. So the podcast is growing. You do the podcast with your husband, Ken, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, how does it's funny. You're the second father and son. I just came back from vacation and my brain's not working quite right yet. You're the second husband and wife team that I've had on recently that do podcasts. So whose idea was this?
It was my idea. Definitely.
How much convincing did it take to get Ken on board?
It took a while, actually. It took a while, but then, you know, I got him turned on to listening to true crime podcasts, and then he got a little bit more interested, and I was like, hey, we can do this, you know? It'll be fun. It's something we can do together. And it started as just a hobby type thing, and then it just grew from there, and now basically that's all I do.
So what did you do before? I know that you were in the Navy. You were a Navy cop, right? Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I was. How did you know that?
I do some serious research on all these episodes, Lauren.
Oh, I'm a little creeped out now.
Yeah. Let me lay some business on you here. So you were a cop in the Navy. And then from what my sources tell me, after you got out of the Navy, you went to college and got a degree as a paralegal.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you more creeped out yet?
No, maybe. I don't know.
If it makes you feel any better, if I'm going to be honest, Erica did all that research for me.
Okay,
so
that's
so
cool.
She's the creep. She's down there in the little black box in the Zoom call. She's the creep that is digging into all your personal affairs. Next up is your social security number and your address, driver's license number, your car, what color it is. But you got out of the Navy. How long were you in the Navy?
4 years.
4 years. Where were you stationed?
I started out in Souda Bay, Greece. I was there for a year, and then I came back to the States for a little bit, and then I spent my last 2 years over in Bahrain, which is like a little bitty island off the coast of Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
It's, yeah. No fun.
No fun? Well, so how was Greece, though? Greece, I would hear, is beautiful.
Greece was beautiful. Greece was absolutely beautiful. I want to go back there on vacation someday. Mm-hmm. Someday.
And was your husband also in the Navy or no?
No, we actually didn't meet until I was out.
Okay.
And I moved back to my hometown and we met through friends.
Now your hometown, now you're in Florida. Are you calling your hometown Florida? Because you're originally from Indiana, right?
No, Ken is originally from Indiana.
Oh, Ken's originally from Indiana.
Florida native.
Gotcha. So you're Florida. Yeah. I see Erica does say you are a Florida native, and see, now Erica, when you write these notes, the order in which you put things, you know I can't figure this stuff out. It says hosted by Lauren and her husband Ken, and then she put from Indiana, which I assumed that you were both from Indiana, and I was trying to sound smart. And look what you did, Erica. So he's from Indiana, but you're originally from Florida.
Yes. Yep.
What part of Florida?
Naples, Florida. Way south.
Okay. Way south. And what was Ken doing down there?
Well, he moved here, I guess, when he was about 12 with his family. Okay. So he pretty much grew up here. Can't call him a native, but he's been here long enough.
So since he was a child, still kind of his hometown. Now,
yeah.
Now he is the son of a canine cop. Was that accurate?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that is correct. Wow. So,
she's pretty fucking good. She really is.
I guess so.
The whole point is that I sound like I'm very smart and well read into my guests, and every time I give myself away and give her the credit for it. But she's a great researcher. Yeah, and I'm told by my sources that him being a son of the canine cop kind of sparked his interest in true crime. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
So what's this like? So you get out of the Navy, you're going back to school to get your paralegal degree. What is Ken doing for a living when you guys meet?
Well, he sells propane and propane accessories.
Yes.
Literally, that's what he does. He sells propane and grills, barbecue grills and whatnot. So, and he's actually worked at the same place since he was 16, and he's 46 now. So,
wow. And he's still doing it, still selling the propane and propane accessories.
Yes. And if you ask him nicely, he'll do the Hank Hill impression, but you have to be special because he can do it really well. It's pretty funny.
I bet he can. Does he ever just stand out in your front yard leaning against the fence with his buddies drinking a beer?
No, not like that.
Man, I don't tell him that. So we're recording this a couple days before Thanksgiving that I will be cooking my Thanksgiving turkey on my big green egg, which is a charcoal grill. And I'm sure that's a big no-no for Ken.
Well, I don't know what... Well, we grill our turkey every year. Well, obviously, we use propane. But we
obviously.
Obviously, yes. Yeah. But our turkeys are amazing on the grill. I don't know. I've never done one with charcoal, but so much better that way than in the oven, I think.
I don't know how to cook one a different way. I've only ever done... Well, so I'm 42, and I just got... my wife and I just had this epiphany like 3 years ago as we were running to her parents and my parents and bouncing all over the place. As we cross into our 40s, we just, it's like, you know, I feel like there comes a point in your life when you're an adult and you have your own four kids that maybe you could just have your own Thanksgiving instead of running all over the place. So, yeah. So we started that a few years ago, and now both of our parents just come to our house and we do Thanksgiving here.
Yeah.
And then I was panicking because we made all these arrangements. And then I was like, so how are you going to cook the turkey? And she's like, I don't know. I've never cooked a turkey. My mom cooks it. How are you? Maybe you. I'm like, I don't know. My folks. Neither one of us knew how to cook a turkey. Turns out it's not as complicated as they always make it out to be.
Well, honestly, I've never cooked a turkey. Ken cooks the turkey. I've never cooked a turkey. So I would be in the same boat.
Yeah. He should really try that charcoal. They come out a lot better.
Maybe you guys can have a conversation about that.
So here you are. You meet Ken. He's selling propane and propane accessories. And now you went to school to get your degree in as a paralegal. Then you were working as a paralegal after that?
I was, yes. For several years, I worked as a criminal law paralegal. I worked for a defense attorney. And first actually I worked for the clerk of courts in the criminal court department. And then I worked for a criminal defense attorney, and then he retired. So I ended up being offered a job by another lawyer that was in his firm. And I ended up doing family law for a few years, which if you think criminal law is bad, family law is like the worst, you know?
Yeah. I'm divorced with two kids. I've been through it. I mean, I'm not divorced now, but I was divorced.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I was a little bit miserable with that. So, do you know what I did next?
You know what? My notes end with paralegal degree. Thanks a lot,
Erica. Oh, well, so not randomly, I actually quit my job. It's probably been over like 5 years now. And I went to beauty school. And okay. I became a cosmetologist, and I am still a licensed cosmetologist, and I do still cut hair, maybe like a few days here and there, mm-hmm. but mostly I just work on the podcast.
So that's quite a career arc. So you went, and you're like the exact opposite of your husband, who at 16 years old settled into the Hank Hill life and is still going strong with it. Did you go into the Navy right out of high school?
I did. So I've always had aspirations. When I was a kid, literally the reason I joined the Navy was because my goal was to someday be in the FBI. And I knew that military experience, particularly being a police officer in the military, would get me that much closer to that goal. And then obviously I had the GI Bill to pay for my college. And then, you know, things changed. I decided to go the law route rather than the law enforcement route. And I still enjoy it, but I still am very much interested in crime. And I mean, I was watching Forensic Files when I was like 12. I read Mindhunter, I think, when I was like 15. John Douglas was my hero.
It's interesting that you went the law route. I know a lot of folks that have, you know, been through the military as, and usually that's kind of the natural progression, is if they're a cop in the military, then they come out and become cops when they get out. But you went the other way and went with the, did you have aspirations of becoming a lawyer, or was just paralegal just kind of dipping your feet in, seeing if you liked it?
There were times I thought about it, but law school's super expensive. So, yeah.
And time consuming.
Yes. Yes. And I was already 4 years behind, because I did, right. I did 4 years in the Navy, and then I actually took a couple years off and then started school when I was like 24, I think, is when I didn't even start college till 24. And then,
right.
I was already
so law school from there. You'd be just about now finishing up probably.
Right. Exactly. So that's like, you know.
Yeah, it's tough that it takes a lot, because I went, you know, as I got into this work, and, you know, the further and further I got into it, there was a time when I thought, you know what, I should just go full steam ahead and get a law degree and become a lawyer, because I'm just so passionate about, especially these wrongful conviction cases I work. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, as soon as you start, especially when you're, you know, my age and you have a family, it's like, this is not practical. I can't go to school full time. I have to work to, you know, make a living for my family. I can't be away from my wife and kids that much. And so it would take me 15 years. I'd have my legal degree by the time I want to retire. My
right. Exactly.
I gave up on that dream pretty quickly.
So, and you know, that world, it's I don't know how to put it. The lawyers, and I don't know, it's just sort of a sleazy world, if you will.
Well, yeah, not a lot of people think real highly of lawyers in general. I mean, I know some good ones, but they're still dirty, you know, dirty lawyers, right?
Actually, the last lawyer I worked for, I loved him to pieces. He did the family law. He was wonderful. And I didn't quit because of him by any means. I quit because of the job, because you know how a nurse is to a doctor? Well, a paralegal is to a lawyer, and we deal with all the clients and we do all the work, and the lawyers basically kind of sign the paperwork and show up in court. And it was particularly hard when I worked for the criminal defense attorney, because he did a lot of federal work, and our clients were actually all over the country, and they would call, and they just call because they were lonely. But then be like, oh, I don't really want to sit here and talk to this murderer for a half hour about whatever. I don't know. Yeah.
It weighs on you. You know, there's a burnout factor in any job.
Yeah, that's true. It's just, yeah, and I could go back to it eventually. I did learn a lot, especially research, legal research and whatnot. That's really helped me, especially with the podcast. And, I'm a very good, I guess, what Erica does, stalking.
Right.
People.
Cyber stalking people. So, to be honest with you, her background into you is pretty disturbing. I mean, you know, there's some basic things, but I mean, she shouldn't know that your husband moved to Florida when he was 11. Like, that's not right. Why does she know that? That's not.
Erica, like, we're talking to you.
That's not online, right? I mean, you can't look up when someone moved to Florida.
I really want to know how you knew that.
I don't know. It's and that his dad was a canine cop, like.
Yeah, like how?
She's not.
Oh, she's hiding.
How does she know that? Yeah. Well, she's not Mike, so she can't defend herself. But this is super creepy, Erica. All these things that you know about it.
It's funny, though. It's funny.
So tell me about the conversation when you tell your husband that you want to make a true crime podcast. So at this time, you're working as a cosmetologist, beautician, whatever. You're cutting hair and such. And he's selling propane and propane accessories. And you guys said, do you guys have kids?
I have one and he has one.
Okay.
They're all both out of the house, though. So
okay.
We're empty nesters, if you will.
So a couple of empty nesters sit down after a hard day's work and you're having dinner and you say, "Hey, Ken, I have an idea." Like, how does this happen? How did the whole podcast come to be?
It just kind of started out, I guess, maybe in a joking way, like, "Hey, we could do this. We could totally do this. You know, we could." And it was like, yeah, ha, ha, ha. And then finally, I got serious and I'm like, I actually really want to do this, even if it's just for fun. And he's so wonderful. You know, all my crazy endeavors, he supports me in everything and anything I want to do. Even if I want to quit my career and cut hair for a living, totally supports me. So, we bought like these cheap gaming microphones. We didn't even have a mixer. We had no clue what we were doing. And, but we just started doing it and we learned along the way. We eventually got better stuff, better equipment. We learned what to do, what not to do. And, now here we are 3.5 years later. We got invited to CrimeCon last year, which was huge for us. That was like the end goal, you know, like
right.
to be asked to CrimeCon was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys don't by any chance, were any of the, either of the kids named Bobby by any chance?
No.
Just all of a sudden, just a damn it, Bobby just came to my mind. Oh.
No. They're both girls. They're both girls. No Bobbies. I guess a girl could be a Bobby, but.
Yeah. Well, he can say that about me when you tell him that I cook my turkey on charcoal. He can call me Bobby.
He's going to laugh so hard when he hears this. I wish he could be here.
Yeah, he's busy selling those it's probably busy time of year right before Thanksgiving.
It is. It is insanely busy. This is our season. In Florida, it's opposite of up north. Like the winter time is our season, so the population like quadruples in our town. And
sure, everybody coming from Michigan to go down there.
Exactly, they got their winter homes here. So
tell me about the name Paradise After Dark. Where'd that come from?
I don't remember how we settled on the name. It was.
Erica knows, if you don't remember.
She probably does. We were trying to think of something like everybody, especially in the area that we live, it's actually Naples, Florida is actually beautiful. It is sort of paradise. We don't live on the beach or anything. We live more inland where the working folk are, but it is like paradise, but it kind of came about because the area we live in tries to, I don't want to say like try and hide crime, but a lot more happens here than they want to print in the newspaper and whatnot. And so I was like, well, what happens after dark? Paradise after dark? I don't know. I can't even remember the conversation. I think we just settled on that.
But paradise being Southern Florida where you're at and...
Well, when we very first started, we were just doing Southwest Florida, which is where we are. Like we literally just doing Southwest Florida. And then after about a year, we branched out to all of Florida. And now we're ready to make the jump and go global. But That's we got, awesome. And we thought about changing the name, but I don't want to change the name because we've already kind of have the reputation. So. I'm not sure. I don't know if I should talk about it yet.
It's the perfect time. We love to break stories here on True Crime Binge.
So we're still sort of working it out, but we are going global. But I'm trying to find cases that are sort of like vacation disappearances or like Allison Mack, who killed her mom and put her in a suitcase over in Bali.
Okay.
Sort of kind of keep the paradise in there a little bit in some way, but I'm not sure yet. We haven't really got, well, it's funny because I already have our cases lined up until March of next year. So I guess I do know what I'm doing, but it's hard to explain.
Right. Well, we don't want to give it all away. People. Right. Start. So that's January 1st. You're going weekly?
Weekly. Yes.
Nice. And then And so the format of the show is you do a lot of like unsolved cases in Florida, but then you also have some episodes that are just like about like Florida urban legends.
Yes. Yes. Every once in a while we throw something in there, some kind of urban legend or, you know, some sort of mystery just to keep it interesting.
Now, outside of like the urban legend stories, like what would you say the mission of the podcast is?
The mission. My personal mission, I prefer to do the unsolved cases. That's why most of our cases are unsolved, because I personally would like to just help the families and keep the word out about these unsolved cases or disappearances. I mean, just keep the word out, just keep it in people's minds. We have had a couple times people with information contact us with information about an unsolved case. And I in turn called Crime Stoppers and then got hooked up with a detective and passed the information along. But that's sort of my goal is I don't really, sometimes it bugs me to think of true crime as entertainment because it's not, I mean, it is in a way, and you have to do those cases on like random serial killer here and there or an urban legend. But my mission is to help people get justice or help cases be solved or find missing people.
Yeah. And listening to some of your episodes, seems like you guys are doing you guys kind of target cases that don't already have a lot of media attention. So you're kind of shining a light on them.
We do. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, a big important player in the space are the shows like this that are keeping these cases from becoming irrelevant and keeping the spotlight on them. And, you know, we just finished up a case on Truth and Justice. We did kind of a mini season and it wasn't really investigated for the first time. It was a lawyers brought it to us. But when that happens, it tells me how powerful like what you're doing and what especially a lot of the short form shows do for bringing attention to cases was when, you know, this Pablo Velez's attorneys came to us and said, look, here's the case. We're still fighting it out in court. We pretty much know who actually did this and he's wrongfully convicted, but we need people to hear his story. We need support. And so they bring it to us and then we tell the story and get people engaged. And I think that it's a huge value in a lot of the short form podcasts because you don't know what it's like to be the family member or the parent or victim or whoever that has never had their story told. And they're watching and listening and seeing everybody else. The story is getting attention and getting help and they're not getting it. So I think it's awesome that you guys pick out cases that aren't already hugely in the media for the most part.
For the most part, yeah. There's some cases that I won't touch just for that particular reason. Like we will never cover Casey Anthony. We're not going to cover Ted Bundy or, you know, there's a lot of notorious stuff here in Florida. And it's like, why are we going to waste our time when we could use our time for this other case out of Sarasota that nobody knows about? And the parents, we're in contact with the parents or the sisters or, you know, somebody. We deal with a lot of family members. Uh-huh. And sometimes they want to talk to us on mic and we have them on. And sometimes they don't, which is fine. But I find having a family member on makes it more real to the listener. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I stay in contact with, I just got a message less than a week ago from a mom. We covered her son's case early, way back, when we first started. And there was a little development in the case. And she's so excited. She wanted to share it with me, you know? And it was just like, you know, makes you feel good that you're helping people, these victims and victims' families. It's really something I'm passionate about.
Yeah. Anytime you're doing something, you're making some effect, great or small, on another human. I think it's a great thing. And again, people just don't, it's easy to sit back and look at the stories that we tell and the things that we do and be like, well, that's just for entertainment or even you get the, well, that case wasn't interesting enough for me. But it's getting someone's attention, and it means a hell of a lot to the family members, particularly
when you're
telling these stories.
Exactly.
So speaking of one of those cases, you guys did a 3-part series on the Taylor McAllister case, which is a pretty tragic case out of Florida.
Yes.
Yeah, and you did some in-depth interviews with her parents during that. So why don't you give us kind of the beats of that case? I don't want to give too much away. We want people to go listen to the whole 3-part series. But you know, Taylor's was a 22-year-old mom. She had twin girls. She struggled with some addiction, and then kind of take it from there. What ended up happening with her case?
Well, she ended up, like you said, she was struggling with some addiction issues, and she ended up in this relationship with a 50-something-year-old man who was not a good guy. Mm-hmm. And from what the family and friends and people who knew her gathered, they got together and she ended up moving in with him. And then he got very possessive over her and he kept her supplied with drugs and money, which sort of kept her there. You know, she's 22. He's 50 something. He already had a criminal record for all kinds of bad stuff, drugs, battery. Rumor it was that he pulled a gun on his ex-wife at one point, but he was charged with like assault. And anyway, so something happens one night and he calls his drug dealer, Deontay Baker, and Baker shows up with this other guy, Caron Archer, and Taylor's unconscious. And he says, she's overdosing or something. She's sick. Get her out of my house. Take her to the hospital. And long story short, she doesn't end up at the hospital. She ends up in an alley. And during her autopsy, the cause of death was asphyxiation and the manner of death was homicide. The problem with this case is there's only two people who know what happened that night in that bedroom, and one of them's not with us anymore. So all three, Archer, Baker, and Butler, he's the old guy. Did I mention his name yet?
No. So that was the Robert Butler. That was the boyfriend.
Yes. That was the old boyfriend. And then there was, Deontay Baker and Caron Archer. They were all charged with failure to report a death, which is a misdemeanor. Meanwhile, Taylor's autopsy, and I read the whole autopsy, her family has stacks and stacks of notebooks. They have every single thing you could ever know about this case. They have copies of it, and they sent it all to me. And according to the autopsy, she had bruises on her arms. She had bruises all over her body, basically bruises on her neck. She had his DNA underneath her fingernails. Meanwhile, when the police interview him the following day, he has scratches on his nose and his arms. And then they find that his DNA is underneath her fingernails. She has petechiae in her eyes, and her mouth was basically abrasions in her mouth, like something was smashed against it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even the coroner or the medical examiner ruled it a homicide. But for some reason, this guy is still out there. And the other two guys, I think that they might actually be in prison for different reasons, drug reasons. But this man is still out there and nothing has happened to him, and her family's convinced he killed her for some reason. Maybe she tried to leave him. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the evidence seems it's a bizarre case because if I understood it correctly, the medical examiner, like you said, ruled it a homicide, that she was asphyxiated, as you said, somebody held something over her mouth and choked until she choked to death.
Exactly.
And then they dump her body in this alley.
Mm-hmm.
The DNA comes back and she's got, you know, Robert Butler's skin underneath her fingernails. He's got claw marks on his face. Seems, I mean, pretty damn clear what happened, and they don't charge him. But then they still have it open as a cold. Like, it would make sense to me if they're like, no, we think she overdosed and this happened. Okay, so case closed. It was an OD. They get charged with not reporting the body. But instead, they say, nope, we still think it's a homicide. It's still a closed case or an open case. But we know that, you know, whose DNA is under her nails. We know where she was. We know who she was with when she died. And it's still open, and they have a Crime Stoppers reward for it. Like, they're trying to figure out, you know, what random third party came into the mix here and killed her.
So you can understand the frustration with this. Yeah. And her parents, I've been in contact with her parents quite a bit. And, you know, they're just beside themselves. Now we're coming up on the 6-year anniversary. It happened in 2016, December 22nd, 2016. And, you know, they keep fighting and fighting. And the St. Petersburg Police Department has basically told them to fuck off. Like,
right.
Really. And I'm not sure exactly what was happening. I know there was some Facebook stuff going on, and they actually received a cease and desist letter from the sheriff's department telling them to stop talking about the case, stop talking about whatever they were talking about. And their lawyer basically said, you can just throw that in the trash because they can't stop you from discussing or trying to get justice for your daughter's murder. It's just, it's so frustrating. It makes me crazy. And it makes me crazy because we know who did it and we know how it happened. And for some reason,
the police know.
I know.
They fucking know.
I know. So what's going on here? We're coming on 6 years. What's going on? I don't understand.
Well, hopefully the work you did on the case and hopefully this interview will get some more people to go check it out. We'll put some more light on it, put some pressure on it. Check out that 3-part series. The podcast is called Paradise After Dark. Her name is Lauren Samples, and the podcast is called Paradise After Dark. Check it out. I'm sure it's going to be your next true crime binge, and definitely check out the 3-part series on the Taylor McAllister case. Lauren, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. It was nice seeing you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, it's awesome. I'll see. Are you coming to CrimeCon?
I think so. I haven't made any like definitive plans or seen the schedule. There's kids' spring breaks around there and stuff, so I got to figure all that out. But I would like to.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll see you there. And thank you so much for having me.
Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing. Music and artwork by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. And make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.